You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We got a great episode tonight. We welcome back Samuel K., singer, songwriter extraordinaire. How are you, Samuel?
Yes, I am here, ready to go.
You're ready to rock, huh?
Uh-huh.
So I had the honor of producing your first EP, Belong, but now we're back with Freedom Street. Tell me, what was the inspiration behind getting back into the studio and doing a longer set of songs and more music, and what was the inspiration behind the record?
Well, I just wanted to start to get my music out there. I know it was quite an accomplishment with getting the EP out before the end of last year, which was my goal for that year. The previous January, I set my goal out to get my first release out by the end of the year, which we did. I was grateful for that and for your help and all the people you know, Nikki.
Of course.
At the same time that the new year started, I was thinking about, well, what do I have any goals for this year? And I go, yeah, I would like to complete an entire album. And so what I've been able to compile, based both on my older music that I'd written years ago and then some new compositions that came to mind more recently, the last year or two, and kind of made a mix of a nice set of songs, and it's 10 tracks all together and different varying themes and tempos and so just wanted to get more of my stuff out there, and hopefully there's some listeners out there that will enjoy it.
I have no doubt you have a very cool throwback 60s sound. I know the Beach Boys are a huge influence on you, and you were way influenced by 60s music in general. Tell me, did you kind of like want to explore more sounds, more kind of diversity in that same era of music when you were writing songs? Like, what were the inspirations behind each song?
Well, I think that I just wanted to kind of add my own flavor to some of the sounds that I'd grown up with and back then and in the 70s as well. And I was very much saddened by the passing of Mr. Wilson, who was the force behind all the great Beach Boys compositions and recordings, and in particular Pet Sounds and then later on Smile. And so, I was very saddened by that. And so I kind of felt that, like he did, you know, to carry on when things got really dark and really unmanageable. And so he just did what he had to do to get through. And I'm grateful for him and other people of his era that were very talented, both writers and singers. And so, it's just somehow the topic of freedom comes to mind, just being, you know, spiritually free or emotionally free to be ourselves and to find out what's good in me and what's good in other people, and just, you know, to let go of the old notions of what I had to be or had to do in order to be, you know, acceptable. So kind of looking for new avenues of awareness and new types of music. And I really appreciate that some of the studio musicians I was working with, yourself included, were able to like mix different genres of music. Like, you know, we had kind of like one song where you added some kind of funk guitar to a kind of basically a pop song. It's really nice kind of middle of the ground feel, I thought.
Yeah, you know what we loved playing your songs? You know, you had so many cool changes. Usually, you know, you don't see a lot of that in modern music today. It's usually based on a couple chords and that's it. But you really love chords and changes and kind of inversions of chords and like major to minor, which is a very 60s way to write, which I love. Tell me where your love of chords came from and kind of like what were the songs that you were learning to kind of like explore some of these chord changes?
Well, I think that growing up, I listened to a lot of, in my teens especially, I listened to a lot of early Beatles and some early Beach Boys things, and I just couldn't believe some of the the chord patterns that they were coming up with. And what I discovered is that the Beatles and also other people just learned a lot of different chords, and it made them more powerful writers in terms of the music aspect of a piece of music. And so I learned a lot of chords that way. And I was fortunate to come from a musical family. My mother played the piano very well, and I remember borrowing her music books. They had the piano music, the words and the melody in it, and the chord diagrams for guitar were in that as well. And so I learned a lot from that. And I believe that she once gave me, when I was a teenager, early Beatle music book, a lot of their early music in it. It was very fascinating. And some of those chord changes were quite difficult for me back then. And I was just, I'd learned guitar, just started learning a few years before that. So it was quite a challenge. And I'm glad that I learned from that. I was lucky to.
Well, you know, what's cool about that too, is as you're learning all these great Beatles songs, you're ingesting some of those influences as when you're writing your own songs. And, you know, you grew up in the Bay Area, and I know that your sister was one of the biggest influences on your musical kind of expertise, because she had the Monkees records and you were listening to a lot of those that we talked about in the last interview. And, you know, when you started exploring Beatles songs, what were the Beatles songs that you immediately went forward with right away? What were the songs you wanted to learn right away?
Well, I don't know if you actually ever really learned it, but there was the first, I believe it was the opening track on the Beatles' second album with the Beatles, It Won't Be Long. And the chords in that, the bridge is just insane. And the three-part harmony ending chord was on like a three-part harmony with a major seventh ending, and just with the song kind of said goodbye to that recording. It just blew me away. I just could not believe the sheer beauty, and it just took me away to another place emotionally when I heard that. It was just wow.
And you know what I noticed about you, which is really kind of a huge compliment, you have really become quite an encyclopedia of music history, especially modern music history within the last 50 years. Do you kind of gravitate towards, you know, a blues rock Americana? Like, was the English Invasion a huge influence, as well as the Monkees? Who were the songwriters that, you know, you kind of have like a Bob Dylan, Elvis Costello sound, but you also use Brian Wilson as a huge influence in the Beatles. So you're using all these chords that Bob Dylan and you know, Donovan and all those guys, they weren't really using those chords. So what's really great about your music, it's kind of like this cool combination. You can really hear all of your influences seeping through your songs. When you start piecing together those songs, how do you figure out what you want to write about?
Well, I don't know if I really know. I think that, the changes. I mean, that song, I think it was only recently that it came to me that song had a lot of chord changes in it, including a modulated final verse. And it's like, I didn't think about that. I didn't even know that the song was called Changes at first. At first I called it Questions, because most of the lyrics of the song, the sentences end with a question, most of the lyrics. And then, but I changed it to the title to The Changes. I don't know why, but, and then I found out, you know, being in the studio with you and the other fellows, is that that things were just happening. And I didn't think there would be, you had some Nile Rodgers guitar going in there. I never, when I wrote that song, 20 some odd years ago, I had no idea that it would be anything like any kind of funky kind of rhythm. And it turned out that way, thanks to you. And you know, and I'm looking for not just people who have done things in the past and have things on record, but other artists such as yourself and other people that, you know, they're doing those kinds of things in real time, here and now. And so, yeah.
Well, what's really cool, you really inspired me, because, you know, you are making some of your first records right now. And you've been holding on to these songs for 20, 30 years in some cases. And then you've been writing some other songs within the last couple of years. And it's just an honor, Samuel, to work with you, because you have such an eclectic style and such a well-versed sense of songwriting. But the coolest part about it is you just write like nobody that I've produced recently. And as a producer, that's always exciting when people are doing things in different directions. And that helps us all sink our teeth into it with our influences. Nile Rodgers is a huge influence on me. So when I heard this song, I was like, oh man, it's got to have a funky guitar line because it just has that groove. And especially with Andre on bass and Dave Tweedy on drums, you know, just that rhythm section made it real easy to kind of build around. But what's so cool is you gave us the freedom, and to quote your album cover title, you gave us a lot of freedom, Freedom Street, to kind of allow ourselves to add our input. Did you feel like you were growing as an artist as you're going through that process?
Oh, yeah, very much so. And about 6 months that it took to at the starting of the recording of the album and then finishing. And I didn't really think it would take that short of time. And I just felt that something was happening. I remember one time in one particular song, I was just feeling so down on myself and down on my luck. And negativity was like that particular day was just the main thing in my head. And I just wanted to say, can we just do this session? So reschedule this session. You didn't let me, you know, get away with it. You said, no, go with it. You know, do the scratch vocal and see how it comes out. And then it just turned out okay the way it was. And I'm grateful to you for encouraging me to really work through this and stick with it, because that's what artists do. That's how they grow. And as artists, hopefully, as we grow, we're helping other people who appreciate our work grow. Because I think art and spirituality are gifts that don't just stay stuck in inside one person. But if they're, you know, if they're not, the gifts aren't paid forward, then they're basically rendered useless.
Well, you know, it was also really cool too. Whenever you'd come into the studio, you're always a sharp dressed man. You always had a suit on, had a cool hat. Like, did that add to kind of like how you were able to create in the studio? Because you kind of raised our level to kind of like, okay, oh, we're in like t-shirt and shorts. Okay, he's in a suit. Let's really throw it out. Do you feel like that helps you kind of get in the mode of an artist to kind of like really create when you're in the studio?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I know that I grew up quite a while ago, and there was LPs were the thing back then. I mean, turning turning it over and see the liner notes and, you know, how the artists in the group or, you know, how they're dressed in the studio that day. And, you know, that's kind of a thing of the past, but I don't know. I just kind of always dug that sort of thing. And check that out. They're even wearing nice outfits from the studio. You know, it's like,
it was super classy. That's what we were all remarking about it, because it was such a cool part of the experience too, working with you, because it didn't matter how hot it was. You came in a suit and ready to kind of like lay down vocals, lay down guitars. You knew what songs you wanted to do. And it's like, it just always unfolded where we were working on a cool new song every session. And you were just ready to kind of throw down and record vocals and play guitar and kind of have a vision with stuff. And, you know, you really were good about directing us kind of like in what we wanted to, you know, how we wanted the songs to sound as a group, so that we kind of kept that driving Motown kind of influence as your band, but also, you know, adhering to the styles and the sophistication of the changes and also the genre, which was huge. You know, we knew Brian Wilson was a huge influence. We knew you loved all the Motown stuff and the Beatles stuff. So we tried our best to kind of write lines and hooks and parts to kind of accompany you. What was one of your favorite parts of the process, from seeing a song start with just, you know, guitar and scratch vocals to hearing it with drums, bass, and guitars? What was one of your favorite parts of the whole process?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for appreciating, you know, that I try to dress nice for a session. And that's nice. I appreciate your guys' kind words. I think that, I don't know. I think, you know, a lot of it too is, as far as the writers that are influencing me or always have, are the Brill Building writers. I don't know if you're familiar with, I think it's 1650 Broadway in New York City or something. But back then, the late 50s up until I don't know when, but, you know, Lieber Stoller, you know, they wrote, you know, Hound Dog for Elvis, and you know, Poison Ivy, and they wrote one for the Drifters, I think, and all the old writers, and you know, Goffin King, Jerry Goffin, Carole King, and also Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, and of course Bacharach and David, and all these just incredible writers really knew how to write with a sophistication that didn't lose people. It had the hooks in it, but at the same time, it's so sophisticated that, I mean, how do they do that in the same song? It's just, I was flabbergasted to someone could do that. Like, take a song like Alfie, I mean, or Goffin King, you know, Up on the Roof. I mean, they just had such a way with hooks, and, you know, Jerry Goffin doing the lyrics and Carole King doing the music. And just how do they make all that work? It's like something was magical was going on in there. And yet, at the same time, I thought that it was kind of like the reputation, I think, was that they just kind of, they had to be in that office, a tiny little office with a piano for 8 hours a day. You better pound out a hit or two, you know, or else, you know, look for another job. It's like, was kind of brutal, actually, but economically, but that's what I heard. I don't know if that's true, but that's not the way I'd like to, you know, be creative and work under those conditions. But so they got some great stuff that came out of that.
Well, in your part of the process, like, did you kind of like when all the instruments were added? Did you like when it was, like, mixed? Like, what was your favorite part of the process?
Well, when I heard it mixed and you know, the first few times I heard it, of course, I didn't have the setup in my car, so I got the way to listen to the final mix in the car and not just on my iPhone. It made a big difference. Go, wow, this is what's going on here. Like the last track of, I think the final track of the album, the tambourine, sustained tambourine at the end of the song. I think it was on a song called Hey There. I think it was David. It was just, wow, it just had just an extra touch of just brilliance. I mean, it just kind of let the song relax when it went away instead of getting cut off or something.
I love that. Well, let's play a song. Since we talked about changes, let's play Changes first.
Okay, sure.
Here's Changes by Samuel O.K.
What should I say when time slips away? Should I say I told you so now? There's lots to get done under the sun. So why do we wait and hesitate, thereby taken away from all the fun? What should I do to get through to you? Should I send an SOS now? Why should I try when your eyes have cried? You can't see through tears when you're engulfed by your fears. Someday you may have to rise. Things ain't so bad when you were more kind to you and everybody else too. We can stand together on this as we find a new me and you to be continued. How should I feel when I don't know what's real? Should I just make wild guesses? How we both need to steady our feet.
love that tune. You know what? What's cool about that song too, that I don't put envelope filter on a lot of stuff, which is where that wah guitar comes, that funky guitar. But I love whenever I can put a sound like that on a song, because it just immediately makes it so funky. But also, what's really cool is in a tune like that, you wouldn't expect that many changes. The modulation at the end, the key change, and then, you know, even the lick to, you know, for the outro, it's just really sharp. Everything about it is really sharp writing. Tell me, what was the inspiration behind that song?
Well, let's see. I believe I wrote that about 20 years ago, and I don't know. I guess I just wanted to see if I could write something in B major on a guitar, because it seemed to, I guess somehow I figured out there, I maybe realized early that, you know, that would lend itself to a half tone upward modulation for the final verse, which would be in C major, like some people consider the easiest key to play, and at least for a keyboard. Right. And I didn't write it on a keyboard, but I wrote it on a guitar. But that might work, you know, finishing that out, because playing in B for a guitar player, for me at least, wasn't that easy. So, but then I figured out that I actually capoed to fret 2, because I actually wanted to start in D flat and then end up in D major, which is same guitar, you know, fingering, but a whole tone higher. So it fit my voice better. But yeah, I just wanted to challenge myself, I guess, to write in B. And so I did that, and just words kept coming out, because I still just had a lot of questions about, you know, why my life isn't better than it was. And yeah, well, I don't know if I'll find out, but I just, hopefully a good song came out of it, and asking myself, you know, questions. And I'm sure other people have questions about themselves and their lives. You know, am I really living up to my potential, or whatever? Am I taking care of my family? You know, things like that. So.
Well, what's also really cool too, it's you have a very positive message with your writing. It's like, you know, I think a lot of people will be able to relate to it, because it's stuff that, you know, you're either struggling with, you know, friendships, or you're struggling with life, or trying to find positivity and purpose. And I think we're all kind of floating around this, you know, planet, kind of figuring out the same things, you know, like dynamics, how to kind of like make the most out of our time here. And I think you're doing it by, you know, making a time capsule of music and messages. Do you find that music, it has become like one of your biggest therapists? Because that's how I feel. I feel like my guitar is my therapist. My piano is my therapist. You know, just being able to write has become a therapist and a great form of therapy. Tell me how music has become a form of therapy for you.
Well, it certainly has been. It's probably been on more levels than one, because sometimes when I get the knowledge that it's time to meditate, I sort of try to make that more of a regular thing that I do. When I do that, I seem to be, you know, calmer and more peaceful and more able to make sense of life and, you know, how my life's going and what the positive qualities I have and that other people have to make, you know, basically the world a better place. And I think that starts at home with our friendships and things that we do in life. And so, yeah, it's just, for me, it's not just a communicator, but in certain forms of music, like real soft, like new age music, for instance, sometimes that is very, very good to meditate. You know, playing that at a low volume makes meditating much more feasible. And, you know, on a world that sometimes gets too noisy, or we've got just too many things going on. Even if I can take just 5 or 10 minutes and just, you know, the real soft sounds of like an orchestra at a low tempo or something like that. You know, there's all kinds of ways to, you know, research those sorts of things. But yeah, that's definitely a part of me. The way it is a therapy, or even when I have some really, really difficult feelings to deal with, like, you know, loneliness is a big one for me right now. And I have a song on there that I was able to just let all that pain out, and you and the other fellas just encouraged me to let it out, you know. And
it's one of my favorite songs on the record, because it's got like a very Rolling Stones kind of vibe. And I love the changes, and I love your vocal delivery. It's actually one of my favorite parts of the song, because it's really honest. It's really kind of just like raw, and it's really kind of, you know, it is the truth and on every level. So You know, I think let's play that song so people can hear it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards, right?
All
right. Here's Samuel OK with I Am So Lonely. So much vibe. It's just so good. You know what I love is, and I've told you this a couple times in the studio, I love when an artist is like, hey man, can you play a guitar solo for me? That is one of my favorite things to do on a record I produce. And man, it makes me so happy when there's something that is just really meaty in the guitar solo, like the tone or like the approach or whatever. I love that guitar solo, and I love that it's on that song because that song is so vulnerable, so honest, and it's got like a mean sound, but it's also got like this, you know, vulnerability in the song that makes it really sweet. It's really, really great. It's just a great song and one of my favorite guitar solos I've ever done on any track. So I love that you gave me that opportunity. Tell me kind of like what the inspiration behind the song was when you were writing it or when you were recording it or singing it.
Well, first of all, yeah, thank you for saying that about that song. And I really enjoy that solo too. It has a you're right. It has like a bite to it. It's, yeah, it's kind of reminds me of something off of Revolver or something. Maybe the riff on She Said, She Said. It kind of like that distorted kind of.
I really remember trying to go for like a Keith Richards thing because
yeah,
he's like the best of those kind of riffs, like Miss You or what's that song? Gimme Shelter. I was trying to do like a Gimme Shelter kind of vibe with that song meets Miss You because he does the best riffs. You know, like he'll do something like that on a song and it just it works. You know, so it was also a marriage between your voice, your guitar, and my guitar, and then also just like coasting on that great rhythm section that was just, you know, kind of grooving. Andre had that muted Motown bass line that was so great. It was just, and then Dave just laid it down. So it's just such a good feeling of a song.
Yeah. And I admit, yeah, it was hard to write it. It was hard to admit that that I just felt that bad and really didn't have a whole lot of answers as to either, you know, why or what to do about it to achieve the feeling of not feeling that bad, you know. And so, yeah, a lot of questions that I should have called that one questions. I kind of probably have more questions about this loneliness thing than about, you know, chord patterns. But
no, I like the title of it because it's super vulnerable. It's like when, you know, I mean, when you see a title like that, it's like, that's not an easy thing to say. And it's not an easy thing to write about. Tell me what, when you were looking at the words on the page after you wrote them, what was your feeling?
I think it was just, yeah, I read them to someone that I trusted and she said, yeah, she said, wow, that's really heavy. These words she used, wow, that is heavy. And yeah, it was heavy, really heavy. And, you know, getting a sore lower back, if you know what I mean, turning that around. And
yeah.
So I think the best way to sublimate it or deal with it or express it or find some way to, you know, to get it out of me is to write about it, be real about the writing. And if there's a chance to put it to music, then yeah, go for it. And somehow I came up with those chords. I didn't write in minor keys very often. So I came up with that and I didn't know what it would be. And I just, those chords, just that tempo and then the chord pattern like that in the minor key, it's kind of just like the name of the song came first. I Am So Alone. I just fit with the rhythm of that and just built it upon that. And then I said, you know, this really is something I got to work on. Yeah, I got to take some risks with, you know, seeking friendships with people and not being so afraid of how it's going to turn out. You know, just live in the moment and, you know, be where your feet are and just, okay, today's just one day with many days, you know. And it's only 24 hours long too, you know. So
that's right. I hope this song becomes a companion for you and a lot of other people too, because that song just feels like a good friend, you know, that is voicing a message that I think we all can relate to. And I hope that song becomes more of that companion to more people that are struggling with it, because that's the real thing. It's like, you want to feel understood, not misunderstood. It's easy to be misunderstood. And I think all we want is to feel understood. And so I think it's a really great song to write and to have written for people that are going through it, and everybody's going to go through it at some point or another. You know what I mean? So it's just it's a really meaningful song, and I'm glad you wrote it, and I'm glad you really wanted it on the record, and I'm glad we took the approach that we did with your guidance and kind of your input as to what we were, you know, where we were going to go with that sound. I remember kind of loosely that you were like, I want it to be like a slow blues, like I want it to have a slow bluesy feel. Were you kind of like envisioning that when you wrote it too?
I don't know. It wasn't the first thing in my mind, but if I kept thinking along those lines about what I wanted each particular instrument to be able to play, something probably would progress to something like that. But I think at first I was trying to just write the way I felt, and just, I think I just gave myself permission. I'm just going to write it. And you know what I think about it later, what other people think about it later, if they see it at all. Because it's easy to say, well, this the writer of the song is, you know, he's just feeling sorry for himself or self-pity. Why doesn't he get up and, well, I don't know. Maybe other people feel the same way. Maybe sometimes I don't know what the steps are to achieving unloneliness. You know what I mean?
Right.
And well, so I'm going to take some chances. You know, it's trial and error in a lot of things in life. And so I'm doing a lot of that stuff and very gradually. Yeah.
Well, I love that you put it out there too, because it's just really, it's just a really honest way to kind of approach that emotion. And not a lot of people feel that strong to put it out there when they're feeling that. So it's so great that you grabbed your guitar and you started writing it. Did you kind of write it in the place of loneliness, or did you write it after the fact and like you felt in a better place? Did you write it in the moment of feeling super low?
Yeah, I wrote this, I think over a year ago. And yeah, I was, I mean, I was definitely with the feeling, and the feeling was with me. We were coexisting as that song was being written. To what degree, I don't really remember. It was maybe at least a year, maybe a year and a half ago. I don't remember, but it was, there was something had to gel, you know, with both the tempo and the chords and also with the theme. I didn't know the exact title, but necessarily, but just, you know, yeah, there was definitely a certain kind of angst inside that I just couldn't get out of me, but it had to come out somehow.
Well, it definitely did. And your vocal delivery was like, it's just so full of soul and character. And, you know, it just kind of had like these cool inflections. I didn't ask you in the moment because I didn't want to take you out of the moment. But do you remember what you were feeling when you were recording that vocal?
Basically just despair. Yeah.
So you were capturing the spirit of the song in your vocal.
Yeah, because I knew, I mean, it couldn't sound like something cheerful and make any sense, unless I were doing a parody or something. But I mean, I wanted the vocal to match the feeling of the words, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's so cool is, like, you're one of my songwriting students, and you've been a production student of mine as well. And, you know, I always used to say in class, you got to paint the words, you know, paint the words with what you're doing musically, whether it's your vocal or a guitar part or whatever. And you did that with this song. You painted the words so beautifully with what you were singing about and how you sang those words. So kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Nicky.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's play another song. Do you want to play What's the Matter, Erica, next?
Yeah, this song here is about... you know, and I'm sure most people have experienced this, unrequited love. Someone that I got to know and friends with, and I was feeling like I wanted more with her than just a friendship, and it just didn't come to pass. So it's about unrequited love, attraction, and her name is Erica. I knew her years ago in college, and that's when I wrote it, so yeah.
Well, let's hear it. Here's What's the Matter, Erica, by Samuel O.K.
What's the matter?
awesome. I love that intro you do too on guitar. It's just so cool because it's like, that's like, it's like not in tempo, and then all of a sudden the groove just kind of like takes over, and it's just like trucking along. It's just so great.
Thank you, Nicky.
Did you ever play it for Erica?
No, I never did.
You're gonna have to play it for her now.
Yeah, I don't know where she is.
Maybe she's listening, Samuel. Maybe the song will cosmically bring her back. Well, tell me what the inspiration when you wrote it. Like, you obviously had Unrequited Love with Erica. Like, did you kind of want to make it conversational when you were writing? Like, what was the approach when you were writing the song?
I guess I was just kind of thinking maybe that, well, yeah, it's just like, I guess just, well, you know, I'm just a regular guy, you know. I mean, what's she looking for? Like a prince or something, but I don't know. But she was very, very amazing. She was a great student. She was very involved in her, I met her in college years ago and very involved in the college community out there in the Inland Empire. And yeah, so she was very interested in a lot of community events and civil rights and very interesting person. And yeah, I was physically attracted to her as well. And, you know, as we all know, that happens in college particularly, and, you know, subsequently as well. And I have no idea where she is now. And oh, well, I just hope she's happy and has a good life.
And you wrote it, you wrote it when you were in school?
Yeah, kind of right after that, it was a few months after I graduated, I think it was, yeah.
And you were like, I'm going to still put all these emotions in. That's pretty cool that you kind of were very, like, you were very strategic about doing it, you know, once you were out of school, probably because the feelings were still there, right? The feelings.
Yeah, the feelings had to go somewhere. I couldn't just, you know, not express them. So I put it in a song.
Did you write the lyrics first, or did you start with kind of guitar and melody?
I don't know. I think it might have been kind of it all just came together. What I get sometimes I write a song and I get the first verse, and it sounds like a really strong first verse, and I may not even know the theme of the rest of the song, but the first verse is really got something, and maybe I try to build on that. Other times I come up with just a song title that I think is catchy or maybe alliterative or something like that, and use that title solely as a thesis for writing the rest of the song. And so it varies. People ask me a lot, you know, do the music first, the words first, and I can't really nail anything down to give them an answer with, because it's
always different.
Very, very variable, a lot of X's in it. You know?
I'd say most of the time when I write, it's usually guitar riff, you know, chords, and then a melody, and then word shape. But sometimes I've written, there's a song on our new record I'm doing right now, and it's called Shine On, and I wrote all the lyrics first, and then put all the guitar and stuff to it. And it was cool to take that approach. So I love that you kind of are well-versed in all the muses and styles of writing, because sometimes the words are going to come to you. Sometimes the guitar riff is going to come to you. Sometimes the melody is going to come to you first. And I think some of the best songs all come in different directions, and especially as a songwriter. So I love that you stay open to where you can get that inspiration from.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about the title track, the album title track, Freedom Street. Now, you had another record, you had another album title, and then once we recorded this song, you totally changed the album title, which I loved, that you were like, you know what, this album should be called after this track. Tell me what that moment was like for you, what made you make that decision?
Well, actually, it's because I think it was, the seventh or eighth track we recorded. And what happened, I think, was, I had that particular title. And it's kind of funny how it worked out tonight that we played the first three songs and now the title track last, which I thought we were going to play first. But actually, because we're talking about the earlier stuff, you know, like the loneliness, the unrequited love, things like that, and how working through that can lead to freedom. It's not like I have to move into an already built, you know, spiritual mansion on Bellagio Drive in Bel Air just to get free, you know? So it's like, I'm kind of realizing now, it's like, wow, you don't buy a freedom house and then to achieve freedom, you do the freedom work to get free, and then you have enough wealth to purchase that. I don't know if I'm making sense of that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's those kind of metaphors, but that's kind of how I see it, is that working through our emotions as artists and just as people in general, you know, whether it's anger or loneliness, fear or whatever, confusion, and that's how we stay in the process of being free. And perhaps maybe we're never completely free, but we're working along the road in the process of becoming more free than we were yesterday.
I love that. Well, you know what? With that, let's play Freedom Street. Here's Freedom Street by Samuel OK.
God got a lot of trouble. Living in a bubble. There must be an answer. A cure for a stage for a soul cancer. Now just keep your feet in the game. Don't carry any more of that shame, regardless of the one that it belongs to. It's been with you many years, been made many a tear. Gotta let it go, gotta let it go if it harms you. Need of a new way. So
Samuel, you know what? That's a great song to call your album after, because it just feels good. The whole song feels good. All of your songs, whether they're sad or upbeat, they just all feel good, man. They're just honest and real, and it's a lot of what's missing in music in a big way, and I love that you put yourself out there the way you do. This song is one of my favorites, also because of the background vocals. You challenged me throughout your record to always come up with new kind of parts that were hooky and melodic, but also supportive of your lead vocal, but also just to make them like Beach Boy-ish or Motown-ish or 60s-ish or whatever it is, you know, Bee Gees, Beach Boys, any of those great harmonies. Tell me when your love of harmonies came about.
Well, first I want to ask you, Nikki, is there just, with all that, is there just a ish regular? No.
Yes.
No, supersized, no. Anyway, but yeah, you're talking about the feel good kind of, like when I started reading about old groups, I was in high school at the time, and it was weird because all my friends liked all the bands of the time, like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, and here I was like listening to older stuff 10 years before that, and because I was finding out about these writers and that their music, the stuff that I was reading in the books, but I said the music, happy music, and one of the bands that had the happiest sounding music was a group called the Lovin' Spoonful, and they did a lot of pop and some folk rock, and so they had their number one hit was Summer in the City.
Yeah.
And Do You Believe in Magic? And I saw the leader of that band, who did most of the writing, John Sebastian. He said he wrote Do You Believe in Magic because no one had heard those chords in rock and roll before, except he heard a song the year before written by Holland Dozier and Holland of Motown, and it's called Heat Wave by Martha and the Vandellas.
Wow.
And for granted. And Sebastian said to the audience, he said, you know, so if I took those, you know, the 2 minor, 3 minor, and made it twice as fast, the song maybe would sound twice as good. So they ended up with Do You Believe in Magic, and that was their first song. It was a real happy song, I thought.
That's awesome. Well, Freedom Street has that vibe. It's got that 60s, 70s Motown, Beach Boys kind of vibe. My favorite part for the song for me as a guitar player was actually your chorus, because I got to do that like that distorted funk guitar line in the chorus, and like I love when that comes around because it just gives it some real grit, but then it comes back to the sweetness in the verse, which is really great. It's hooky. It's very hooky.
That's why I like it, the combination between grit and pop, and I think it's best example of it is on Revolver, the Beatles album, And Your Bird Can Sing, because the guitars are a little distorted, but the song has some wonderful pop chord progressions and harmonies. It's amazing.
I agree. Samuel, I hope you never stop writing. And for all of our listeners, you can find Samuel on Instagram at SamuelOK. And Samuel, I look forward to many more songs from you. Hopefully you'll ask me to come back and be your producer. I'd love to play some shows with you too. And it's been a pleasure to have you on Wake Up Hollywood to showcase your LP. And we had you on for Belong, your EP. So right now you've kind of hit a big, cool dream landmark where you have 15 songs out. You've got 2 records out, 1 EP, 1 LP. How does that make you feel?
Really good. Really makes me feel like I'm doing the kind of work that I've always been meant to do, I believe.
Absolutely. And you really inspired me with this record, because with all of your songs, because, you know, you held on to these songs for 20 and 30 years. And for me to be the catalyst to help bring it to life, it really was one of the sweetest parts of this record for me. So thank you.
That makes me happy in my heart to hear you say that, Nikki. Yeah. I guess I'm doing my job, huh?
You are. You're doing your dharma. That's the phrase. You're doing your dharma. You're living your dharma. You're living your life, you know, the way that it should be.
Yeah. So great to work with you.
Likewise. Yeah. Well, check out Samuel OK's record on Spotify and on all platforms. Freedom Street is his latest LP. You can also check out Belong. Highly recommend, if you love any of the songs that you heard tonight, check them out, share them with your friends. On behalf of Samuel, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and hair grease. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Woohoo!
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.